Chapter 7. Or any belonging to me. It was not that. The license was wrong, and he couldn't get another the same day. He will tell you in a moment how it was, if he comes. Why didn't he bring you back? That was me. Again sobbed Thomason. Then I found we could not be married. I didn't like to come back with him, and I was very ill. Then I saw Diggory Venn, and was glad to get him to take me home. I cannot explain it any better, and you must be angry with me if you will. I shall see about that, said Mrs. Eobright. And they turned towards the inn, known in the neighborhood as the Quiet Woman, the sign of which represented the figure of a matron carrying her head under her arm, beneath which gruesome design was written the couplet so well known to frequenters of the inn. Since the woman's quiet, let no man breed a riot. 1. The inn which really bore this sign and legend stood some miles to the northwest of the present scene, wherein the house more immediately referred to is now no longer an inn, and the surroundings are much changed. But another inn, some of whose features are also embodied in this description, the Red Lion at Winfrith, still remains as a haven for the wayfarer. 1912. The front of the house was towards the heath and rainbarrow, whose dark shape seemed to threaten it from the sky. Upon the door was a neglected brass plate, bearing the unexpected inscription, Mr. Wildev, engineer, a useless yet cherished relic from the time when he had been started in that profession in an office at Budmouth by those who had hoped much from him, and had been disappointed. The garden was at the back, and behind this ran a still deep stream, forming the margin of the heath in that direction, meadow land appearing beyond the stream. But the thick obscurity permitted only skylines to be visible of any scene at present. The water at the back of the house could be heard, idly spinning whirlpools in its creep between the rows of dry feather-headed reeds which formed a stockade along each bank. Their presence was denoted by sounds, as of a congregation praying humbly, produced by their rubbing against each other in the slow wind. The window, whence the candlelight had shone up the veil to the eyes of the bonfire group, was uncurtained, but the sill lay too high for a pedestrian on the outside to look over it into the room. A vast shadow, in which could be dimly traced portions of a masculine contour, blotted half the ceiling. He seems to be at home, said Mrs. Eobright. Must I come in too, aunt? Asked Thomason faintly. I suppose not. It would be wrong. You must come, certainly, to confront him, so that he may make no false representations to me. We shall not be 5 minutes in the house, and then we'll walk home. Entering the open passage, she tapped at the door of the private parlor, unfastened it, and looked in. The back and shoulders of a man came between Mrs. Eobright's eyes and the fire. Wildev, whose form it was, immediately turned, arose, and advanced to meet his visitors. He was quite a young man, and of the two properties, form and motion, the latter first attracted the eye in him. The grace of his movement was singular. It was the pantomimic expression of a lady killing career. Next came into notice the more material qualities, among which was a profuse crop of hair impending over the top of his face, lending to his forehead the high-cornered outline of an early Gothic shield, and a neck which was smooth and round as a cylinder. The lower half of his figure was of light build. Altogether he was one in whom no man would have seen anything to admire, and in whom no woman would have seen anything to dislike. He discerned the young girl's form in the passage, and said, Thomason, then, has reached home. How could you leave me in that way, darling? And turning to Mrs. Eobright, it was useless to argue with her. She would go, and go alone. But what's the meaning of it all? Demanded Mrs. Eobright haughtily. Take a seat, said Wildev, placing chairs for the two women. Well, it was a very stupid mistake, but such mistakes will happen. The license was useless at Anglebury. It was made out for Budmouth, but as I didn't read it, I wasn't aware of that. But you had been staying at Anglebury? No. I had been at Budmouth till 2 days ago, and that was where I had intended to take her, but When I came to fetch her, we decided upon Angleberry, forgetting that a new license would be necessary. There was not time to get to Budmouth afterwards. I think you are very much to blame, said Mrs. Eobright. It was quite my fault we chose Angleberry, Thomason pleaded. I proposed it, because I was not known there. I know so well, that I am to blame, that you need not remind me of it, replied Wildov shortly. Such things don't happen for nothing, said the aunt. It is a great slight to me and my family, and when it gets known there will be a very unpleasant time for us. How can she look her friends in the face tomorrow? It is a very great injury, and one I cannot easily forgive. It may even reflect on her character. Nonsense, said Wildov. Thomason's large eyes had flown from the face of one to the face of the other during this discussion, and she now said anxiously, Will you allow me, aunt, to talk it over alone with Damon for 5 minutes? Will you, Damon? Certainly, dear, said Wildov, if your aunt will excuse us. He led her into an adjoining room, leaving Mrs. Eobright by the fire. As soon as they were alone, and the door closed, Thomason said, turning up her pale, tearful face to him, It is killing me, this, Damon. I did not mean to part from you in anger at Angleberry this morning, but I was frightened, and hardly knew what I said. I've not let Aunt know how much I suffered today, and it is so hard to command my face and voice, and to smile, as if it were a slight thing to me, but I try to do so, that she may not be still more indignant with you. I know you could not help it, dear, whatever Aunt may think. She is very unpleasant. Yes, Thomason murmured, and I suppose I seem so now. Damon, what do you mean to do about me? Do about you? Yes. Those who don't like you whisper things which at moments, make me doubt you. We mean to marry, I suppose, don't we? Of course we do. We have only to go to Budmouth on Monday, and we marry at once. Then do let us go. Oh, Damon, what do you make me say? She hid her face in her handkerchief. Here am I asking you to marry me, when by rights you ought to be on your knees imploring me, your cruel mistress, not to refuse you, and saying it would break your heart if I did. I used to think it would be pretty and sweet like that, but how different. Yes, real life is never at all like that. But I don't care personally, if it never takes place, she added with a little dignity. No, I can live without you. It is Aunt I think of. She is so proud, and thinks so much of her family respectability, that she will be cut down with mortification, if this story should get abroad before it is done. My cousin Klim too, will be much wounded. Then he will be very unreasonable. In fact, you are all rather unreasonable. Thomason colored a little, and not with love. But whatever the momentary feeling which caused that flush in her, it went as it came, and she humbly said, I never mean to be, if I can help it. I merely feel that you have my aunt to some extent in your power at last. As a matter of justice it is almost due to me, said Wildov. Think what I have gone through to win her consent, the insult that it is to any man, to have the banns forbidden the double insult to a man unlucky enough, to be cursed with sensitiveness, and blue demons, and heaven knows what, as I am. I can never forget those banns. A harsher man would rejoice now in the power I have of turning upon your aunt by going no further in the business. She looked wistfully at him with her sorrowful eyes as he said those words, and her aspect showed that more than one person in the room could deplore the possession of sensitiveness. Seeing that she was really suffering, he seemed disturbed and added, This is merely a reflection, you know. I have not the least intention to refuse to complete the marriage. Tamsy mine, I could not bear it. You could not, I know, said the fair girl, brightening. You, who cannot bear the sight of pain in even an insect, or any disagreeable sound, or unpleasant smell even, will not long cause pain to me and mine. I will not, if I can help it. Your hand upon it, Damon. He carelessly gave her his hand. Ah, by my crown, what's that? He said suddenly. There fell upon their ears the sound of numerous voices singing in front of the house. Among these, two made themselves prominent by their peculiarity. One was a very strong bass, the other a wheezy thin piping. Thomason recognized them as belonging to Timothy Fairway and Grantor Cantle respectively. What does it mean it is not skimmity writing, I hope, she said, with a frightened gaze at Wildov. Of course not. No, it is that the Heath folk have come to sing to us a welcome. This is intolerable. He began pacing about, the men outside singing cheerily. He told her that she was the joy of his life, and if she'd consent he would make her his wife. She could not refuse him. To church so they went. Young Will was forgot, and young Sue was content. And then was she kissed and set down on his knee. No man in the world was so loving as he. Mrs. Eobright burst in from the outer room. Thomason, Thomason, she said, looking indignantly at Wildov. Here's a pretty exposure. Let us escape at once. Come. It was, however, too late to get away by the passage. A rugged knocking had begun upon the door of the front room. Wildov, who had gone to the window, came back. Stop, he said imperiously, putting his hand upon Mrs. Eobright's arm. We are regularly besieged. There are 50 of them out there if there's one. You stay in this room with Thomason. I'll go out and face them. You must stay now, for my sake, till they are gone, so that it may seem as if all was right. Come, Tamsy dear, don't go making a scene. We must marry after this, that you can see as well as one. Sit still, that's all, and don't speak much. I'll manage them. Blundering fools. He pressed the agitated girl into a seat, returned to the outer room, and opened the door. Immediately outside, in the passage, appeared Grantor Cantle singing in concert with those still standing in front of the house. He came into the room and nodded abstractedly to Wildov, his lips still parted, and his features excruciatingly strained in the emission of the chorus. This being ended, he said heartily, here's welcome to the new made couple, and God bless 'em. Thank you, said Wildov, with dry resentment, his face as gloomy as a thunderstorm. At the Grantor's heels now came the rest of the group, which included Fairway, Christian, Sam the Turf Cutter, Humphrey, and a dozen others. All smiled upon Wildov, and upon his tables and chairs likewise, from a general sense of friendliness towards the articles as well as towards their owner. We be not here for Mrs. Eobright after all, said Fairway, recognizing the matron's bonnet through the glass partition which divided the public apartment they had entered from the room where the women sat. We struck down across, do you see, Mr. Wildov, and she went round by the path. And I see the young bride's little head, said Grantor, peeping in the same direction, and discerning Thomason, who was waiting beside her and in a miserable and awkward way. Not quite settled in yet, well, there's plenty of time. Wildov made no reply, and probably feeling that the sooner he treated them the sooner they would go, he produced a stone jar, which threw a warm halo over matters at once. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.